The information presented in this podcast is intended to be for entertainment and educational purposes only. It should never be used in place of advice given by a mental health or medical professional or as a substitute for mental health treatment. If you're struggling with a mental health issue, please seek professional help.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Fangirl Business.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Krisha. And today we are going to bring you part three of our series of deconstructing the 20th episode of Supernatural's 15th season, Carry On. And now we are going to turn our attention to Dean's funeral, what comes after that for Sam and the goings on in heaven. So basically starting at Dean's funeral and going through the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. So as we've said in the other episodes, we are really looking at this through the lens of just how we interpret the story, what works for us and what doesn't, understanding how we experienced the narrative, trying to really understand where the feelings that we had and continue to have come from, since we've had such big feelings about this finale episode. We understand a lot of this content is heavy and triggering and difficult, so we want to assure you again that we will not be using any audio from the episode. It'll just be the two of us muddling through.
Doing our best.
Yeah.
And again, I'll do chapter markers for this one to you on the actual episode, so you should be able to scroll through and see what we're talking about when. Mm-hmm. So if you need to skip anything, you should be empowered to do that.
Yes. Please mind your mental health and boundaries, friends.
Yes, exactly. And at this stage, we have been recording for hours because we just want to get this done. So if we sound tired, it's because we are tired, because
that is correct.
We have been marathoning this so we can kind of be done with it. Be gone.
Yes.
So we're moving on to the third act, which is Dean's funeral. So I think one of the themes that was kind of prevalent in the beginning of the episode, but wasn't as noticeable because it was just so busy. They were eating pie and going into areas with lots of people. They were having a routine. They were fighting monsters. There was a case to solve. I think it just wasn't as noticeable, but this was a theme that ran through the whole episode, was one of isolation.
Yeah.
And yes, we know that there were logistics at play because of COVID, but they failed to explain all of the choices that happened. You know, they were able to stock a whole pie festival in there, but not have even the back of people's heads who might sort of kind of be so-and-so.
Right.
For Dean's funeral. And so I struggled with the canonical reasons for why Sam would choose to have this Hunter's funeral by himself.
Yeah.
With just Miracle there. And I could see a couple of reasons. Like, you don't want the spirit to linger, so gotta burn him quick. Following through to the duty that he promised his brother, which was that he was not going to bring him back. So going through with that, you know, on a surface level makes sense. But so often, you know, like you saw with other hunters, Asa Fox, even with Mary, there would be some kind of gathering that was associated with that. And people would make the time to be there, even if it was a quick burn.
Yeah.
People put in the time and effort to be there. So you contrast this with the funeral of Asa Fox, where hunters traveled to Canada, which, you know, in the view of most Americans, is like the boonies.
It's a whole different world.
Boonies. But they went to Canada for Asa Fox, who none of us had ever heard of before. But like the Winchesters, Dean Winchester, you're the Dean Winchester? That guy? Nobody shows for his funeral. Which to me says that Sam didn't tell anyone. And again, that sends a very troubling message because Sam's always been the one who tells everybody what Dean's up to.
Right.
Newsletter.
The newsletter.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody knew what was going on with Dean, and he kept being like, what? How do you? Yeah, because Sam would tell them. And knowing that issues with mental health and well-being and depression often tend to be places of isolation. You either feel isolated when you're not actually, or you isolate yourself from people, you withdraw from your social contacts. All of these are again pointing to the fact that Sam is not okay.
Yeah, I guess it invoked a couple of things for me, which is number one, this episode erased Eileen entirely.
Yeah.
Right? She is not discussed. She is not addressed. It's Sam is racing to her rescue, and then nothing else is ever said.
Yeah.
And so my concern with that scene was, did none of them ever come back?
Yeah.
We never saw it. The last visual we have of all of them is disappearing in terror. You know, the last visual that we have of Donna, of Bobby, of Charlie, is them being finger snapped.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no indication that they came back other than trusting Jack. But Dean just died on a dumb hunt. So how much trust do I have in Jack at this point?
Not a heck of a lot.
No, because those little boys were dragged out of their home after their parents were attacked. And you know, I mean, it just, I don't get that feeling of, oh, things are okay.
This is not a loving God. I mean, that's the bottom line.
No, and everything about this episode, is that things are not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think it's a stretch to then be like, oh my God, everybody stayed dead.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's gone.
Mm-hmm. Or like wherever they are, because we don't know. Yeah. Like, are they dead? Are they elsewhere? We don't know what Chuck actually did with everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other side of that I've seen, too, is that some people felt like Eileen was never mentioned again, because once Chuck was out of the picture, that showed that Sam's feelings had been manufactured. But again, like we said in one of our past episodes, deconstructing this, that would mean that everything that Sam and Dean felt over 15 years was manufactured, that we didn't mm-hmm. know them at all. And talk about things I am rejecting. Absolutely not. Like,
well,
no.
It would also make them sociopaths, because you don't make these kinds of connections as relatively healthy human beings and then suddenly not care about anyone that you've ever met that mm-hmm. has been close to you, even if he wasn't in love with her.
Yeah.
Even if that was the line that they were going with, that the love story was not real, he cared for her as a friend.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't just be like, oh, well, I guess she's gone now.
Right.
That's just like, that's a sociopath. That's not Sam in any sense of Sam ever.
Yeah. So there's that horrific piece of our loved ones still gone. But even with the mental health, even if we take that, okay, everybody's back and this is Sam's choice to just not reach out, to not tell anyone, that is also really disturbing, because they then go into him going through that ordinary life that we saw at the beginning of the episode that mm-hmm. really didn't have much joy in it then either. And now it's even worse. Now mm-hmm. the toast pops and Sam flinches, which is a PTSD response that we've seen from him in the past.
Yeah.
When he's not in a good place emotionally, he flinches quite a bit at loud mm-hmm. noises. And it was one piece of toast, right? So it yeah. was really driving home that he is alone.
Yeah.
And so this wasn't, to my mind, just COVID protocols, or I suppose they could have leaned into it, but they are really telling the story that Sam is profoundly alone. He does not have his found family
no.
to comfort him. That family that they built, they're not there. He is alone.
Which is just so, like, I just sit there imagining Eileen just holding him.
Yeah.
And like, I just would never wish for him to go through any of this alone.
Yeah.
It just, my heart broke for him. And it was just awful.
I mean, Jody would be there. She's been through so much loss. She would know how to be a friend.
She would bring food, and like Alex mm-hmm. would make vegetarian meals because they both like vegetarian food.
Yeah. I mean, it's so needless. And it just felt like everything was pointless.
Yeah.
They went through all of this, all of these trials and tribulations for what? The world yeah. still has monsters.
Yep.
You know, people still die. He's still lost. Cass died for nothing. Dean died for nothing. Jack was elevated for nothing. You know, I don't see the point in any of it.
Yeah.
In what we were given. And I don't understand why you would end a 15-year epic Mm-mm. with, they're all miserable.
Yeah, no.
Just why?
I mean, it's such a divergence from their trajectory of the whole season, which was self-actualization, fulfillment, happiness, togetherness, a family. Mm-hmm. So again, this is just underscoring the fact that something is deeply, deeply, deeply wrong here. This is not the story that was being told. The story that was being told was one where people reached out to each other. Mm-hmm. People were drawing close to each other, both romantically and platonically. There was a coming together of people. And that was the trajectory of the whole season, was for them to come to a place of fulfillment. And for Sam, that was a place of love with Eileen. That was a place of leadership with all of the people from Apocalypse World. You know, we just saw him starting to take that mantle back in episode 18, where all of the people came because it was Sam who was calling for them. Yeah. So like, that was the trajectory that he was headed on. So for him to end up alone in the bunker by himself with only a dog while he's sitting there with tears streaming down his face is just such a departure from the trajectory upon which he was set. There's such dissonance there from where he was headed to where he ended up that, to me, again, this is another moment of us looking at one and the other and saying, okay, this does not fit. This does not match. This does not work within what we were given, yeah. what was canon leading up until this moment. And so again, this is another moment where I'm sort of going, okay, yes, there's a reason why this didn't feel real. There's yeah. a reason why this felt hollow, because it was. We've been going in one direction and suddenly we take a hard left turn and mm-hmm. it all goes to hell.
Yeah, you know, there's this part, I was doing research on symbolism on something, and this is that, like, hive mind of the fandom. I was reading somebody's analysis on something, and it just, like, sparked a thought on this other thing. I was thinking about Sam sitting on Dean's bed with Miracle, and those tears streaming down his face, right? And he's just devastated. And there's this pizza box in the frame in the background mm-hmm. by Dean's bed that we were talking about at the beginning, wondering what that was about. Because the only other time we've seen that brand of pizza was in a dream of Sam's. Like, it wasn't real. It was a dream sequence. Mm. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting now that Sam is framed with it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's Sam sitting there
with this visual cue, with something that is in the real world that shouldn't really be in the real world because it's only been shown in a dream before. Okay, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah, okay. But also back in season 5 in Dark Side of the Moon, when Sam and Dean go to heaven for the first time, one of the memories that Sam has is a time when he ran away from Dean mm-hmm. and lived by himself for, I don't know, like a week or something. And he had a dog and he had pizza. And that was one of his very happiest memories. That is his literal heaven. Mm. And for Dean, the memory was one of his very worst memories because Sam escaped on his watch. And, you know, Dean said at that point, You don't remember, do you? You ran away on my watch. I looked everywhere for you. I thought you were dead. And when Dad came home...
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. So this heaven memory for Sam was associated with abuse from John.
Yeah.
For Dean. And now, here we have Sam.
On his own.
Away from Dean. With a dog. And pizza. And...
it's hell.
And it's terrible, and he's miserable, mm-hmm. which makes it hard to understand the point. Meanwhile, Dean is with John in heaven.
Ugh!
And Grisha. Yeah.
These are both written by Dab.
Both written by Andrew Dab. So this is not coincidental. I mean, I suppose it could be. I don't want to imply intent, but... they are both literally written by the same dude. So
something's going on there. Yeah. But it's interesting because it was his escape. It was his happiness. It was his joy. It was his heaven. Now he's living the same thing, but it's hell.
Well, and I wonder if they were trying to flip it. Like if they were trying to do a narrative flip on that to where now Sam's the one that memory is hell for, where Dean is in heaven. But that doesn't work if you see John as an abusive parent.
Because John is there. Yeah.
Which he was. So yeah, it's really confusing and conflicting emotionally.
Well, in both cases, it ends up being a dark place.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, the contrast there though. Like, but again, it's that imagery that's being invoked. And that's very typical of Dab's work.
Mm-hmm.
He'll invoke things with echoes visually as well as with dialogue. So, oof, that was a good catch.
Well, and so as I'm sitting in this, okay, so ordinary life was a bummer at the beginning of the episode. And now it's just trauma on top of trauma on top of isolation. What was the point of any of it?
Mm-hmm.
Then Dean's other phone rings, which is cute, I guess, that we get to see Dean's other phone, but I just definitely was not in the mood for cute at this point.
No.
It was very much lost on me. And this guy is calling. And so he says that Donna had said that he was the guy to call. And this guy is from Austin, Texas, which is either a nod to Jensen and Jared, because that's where they live, or it's a nod to Walker, which is the new show for Jared.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, Texas, nowhere near Minnesota.
No.
So, again, not that people can't travel, but one of those, like, why wouldn't Donna call?
Yeah.
And so, again, I'm concerned. I think that strangers call Sam and Dean, but if it's an important trade-off, they usually call to give them a heads up. I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that usually how it's done?
Well, I mean, and it's Donna. She talks about everything. Yeah. So, like, of course she would call and be like, hey, Sam. Right. Hi, Dean. It's Donna. Just wanted to give you a heads up.
Yeah. Why couldn't we get that reassurance that they were okay unless we're not supposed to think that they're okay?
Mm-hmm.
In which case, why is that not the focus?
Why is that accepted? Why are they not fighting it?
Right.
If they have free will and they're not total sociopaths.
It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Because if, we'll just go with Eileen, right? So if Eileen was finger snapped and never came back, why wouldn't we be seeing Sam grieving that profoundly? Mm-hmm. And if she did come back, why isn't she there?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I feel like that's true for Found Family, all of them. Wayward and Charlie and AU Bobby and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense to not address it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like having Donna call to be like, hey, there's this hunt.
And then ending the conversation with, Donna, I have some news.
Right. Something. I just don't understand the choice there. It doesn't make sense to me. Narratively, mm-hmm. emotionally, it just feels very... I just felt like watching a different show, honestly.
Well, and that's because this is not the story that was being told throughout season 15.
Yeah.
They brought back Eileen. Why do you bring back somebody who's a love interest several episodes into the final season, unless they're endgame, why bring back all of the AU hunters and Charlie and Donna and Bobby in the third to last episode unless you're gonna see them again?
Right.
Narratively, that makes no sense in terms of you're building towards a thing. Just if we're looking at Sam, and we'll get into more of this, I know, but if we're looking at Sam, he's being purposely built back up as a leader. He's being purposely built back up as a witch and the inheritor of Rowena's magic. The baton is being passed from Bobby to Sam in that episode where they're all in the silo. And we have the wayward women linked in through Donna. Mm-hmm. So they're showing the importance of all of these people in terms of who Sam is and who he's becoming. And narratively, you don't strip all that away and then leave it gone.
Yeah.
As a finale for a series. The structure of that makes no sense.
Yeah.
You often will have a loss or a couple of losses towards the end of a finale that will be very poignant and tragic. But you don't lose everybody and have nobody come back. That's not the way that stories work in a typical sense. And in many ways, Supernatural tells a very typical story.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's the hero's journey.
I mean, exactly.
We literally just had an episode about that this season. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for me, it's not even that it doesn't... Okay, some of it is because it doesn't make narrative sense. But it's that it doesn't make narrative sense because they don't address it. If you want to kill everybody, can we at least understand what happened? Can we understand why our heroes are just accepting that? Can we see that emotional journey?
Yeah.
Make it make sense. And it didn't.
Yeah. And so even the internal logic of that episode doesn't work.
No.
Because there are things that they should have been telling us that they did not. And without those things, the story collapses in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need to be there.
Yeah. And then so all of this confusion and this, like, what is the point of any of this is then topped off with this phone call from this dude in Texas that we have no emotional attachment to and don't care about, saying that bodies turned up minus their hearts. So now it's okay. So werewolves too. So if we have vampires that we know are back, and now we have werewolves that we know are back or that weren't taken out, so that means everything stayed. Demons, angels, monsters. What was the point of all of this?
Yeah, again, it leaves all of these really big issues. So many of these monsters are victims.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare at this stage in the story for there to be monsters that have always been monsters. Creatures like Eve, like the Leviathan, they're pretty much all gone. And now it's people who are victims.
It's Garth.
Well, yeah. And as we saw with the teenage boy in this season, he was a victim of a vampire attack. He didn't want this. He tried to fight it. He had no guidance. He had no one to help him. So he hurt somebody. How many gray area monsters are there in addition to the ones that are straight up good like Garth? And the fact that these people are victims and that this was a structure that Chuck imposed upon this world, and Death talked about how he made this structure and then set it into motion so it would kind of keep tick tick ticking away in his absence. Why are these fundamental flaws not being fixed? Why is Jack tolerating a fundamentally flawed system that is going to condemn people who are victims to purgatory? Mm-hmm. And then we don't know what happens when they die in purgatory. That's something we were never told. So do they just stop existing? Do they go to hell? Do they go to heaven? Do they go to the empty? Like, what happens to these monsters? And like, what happens to Garth? Like, Garth doesn't deserve to go to purgatory.
And his babies.
It is yes.
That are named his after wife. Sam and Cass. Yeah, I mean, and what happened in the empty? It was loud. And then that storyline was dropped.
Yep.
You made it loud. Clearly something was happening. And then it was just gone.
Yep.
We have no idea what happened. We have no idea what's happening now. Just you and I, as we went through season 15, kept saying that what we theorized or what we hoped for is that they were going to completely raise the framework, that they were going to just tear it all down and start again, mm-hmm. because they've been showing us in season one that it is unjust, that it's not right. And they got part of the way there because they had Rowena specifically saying that she wasn't doing demon deals anymore. She was only taking people that truly deserved to be there. So it's like they started. And then the empty was loud. So it's like they were going to address it there. And then it just sort of evaporated.
Well, and to me, that's one of those moments that says very loudly that something happened. Because you don't drop a line like you made it loud right before you have a character like Cass going into the empty.
And it was the title card. Sorry. I just... Yep. I made it loud.
I know.
And then it exploded into the title card that we've seen all season. It seemed like it was thematically supposed to have incredible significance.
Yes. It was the centerpiece of the title card. We look back at last season with Michael and all of the things that happened with Michael that were put into motion by his presence were in the early part of the season directly his fault. And the whole thing opens with those flapping wings and his grace that we get to see. And the season before that, it's Jack's eyes. And everything focuses on Jack. So the empty was supposed to be bigger than what it was. That's what this tells me. That's what this sudden and abrupt dropping of a thread tells me, in conjunction with the, you know, the title card, in conjunction with the fact that you have a main character going into the empty who has gotten out of the empty multiple times before and who has combated the empty successfully and who has been awake and aware in the empty and talked to other beings in the empty. To have the empty suddenly be loud right before this character goes back in tells me that something's going to happen in the empty. But we never see any of it.
It's just gone.
It's just gone. So to me, that's pointing towards, again, something happened, something went wrong. The story that we got was not the story that we were supposed to get. And again, we don't know why. We don't know who. We don't know how. We don't know where. All we can do is say something went wrong. Okay, so let's move on.
Well, there's a couple other things that happened in that scene in the bedroom. There's one very, very clear shot of beer bottles on the table by the door. And it was Schultz, which you said is associated with death. And the Margie one that I can't pronounce.
Margie Kugel,
That is associated with home.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting combination of things. We also see Dean's desk. And this is a topic of... We're going to breathe. There's a document on the desk. And fandom detectives have done what they do and enhanced it. And it looks to be a police officer job application sitting on Dean's desk, open and signed. So my immediate emotional response to that was pure unbridled rage, because I do not believe in any universe that Dean Winchester would become a police officer. He has stated multiple times over multiple seasons that he doesn't think much of cops, nor do I believe, but it doesn't make logical sense. You can't go flashing your badge saying you're FBI like he did in this very episode. If you work for a police department, you also can't work for a police department if you're a wanted fugitive and or dead, or both. And I get that they can change their names, but he can't change his face. And, you know, their wanted pictures have been well known for a long time. So it just doesn't, it didn't make any sense. I think that after the initial brain freeze from the rage, I was able to take a breath and wonder if, because it's in a file and there were books open on the desk, if it was part of an investigation. So now I've decided personally that it's him investigating bad or dirty cops. because I feel like that would be something that he would do. But we don't know. We don't know. It's just all questions. All theories and possibilities. And fandom loves to do that. We really do. But at the end of an episode like this, where it's just all questions.
Well, and it's the finale.
Yeah. That's not what I was... wasn't helpful.
We're looking for resolution.
Yeah. So then we have, you know, Sam's been wandering around the bunker. He gets this call from this guy in Texas about a werewolf. He says he'll be on his way. And so then Sam does this sort of slow walk. And he looks like he's leaving the bunker forever. But I don't understand if he's still hunting why he would do that. Because he would need the resources.
Yeah.
And the protection, whether he's hunting or not, I have to believe if all of the monsters remain, he's still Sam Winchester. They're still gunning for him. That's why the bunker was such a big deal to find, because it's warded against, you know, everything except for the things that it's not. You know, the things that wander through. But, like, if he was leaving, wouldn't he pack his stuff? You know, if it's a routine hunt, why does it look like he's never coming back? And if he's never coming back, why does it look like a routine hunt? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It seemed like this scene with Gravitas where he's shutting off the lights. And I'm like, well, but aren't you just going to Texas? You know, like, what is happening here? Super confusing.
Yeah. I mean, we know that it was difficult for him to stay in the bunker after all of the AU hunters died with Michael. He literally didn't want to be in that space anymore. And so I could see him needing to get away from the bunker for a while. But like you say, there's emotional Sam, but then there's also logical Sam. And emotional Sam might want to leave for a little bit, but he would come back. So there was a finality to it. I don't know if it was just because it was going to be the last time that we saw the bunker, but it felt very final with the way that he was kind of walking out and looking back.
It just, it felt like another example of something that didn't make sense within the story.
Yeah.
And even if I understood it as a nod to the fact that it's the last time for us, I don't want it to be about that. I want it to make sense in the story that I'm watching.
Right, exactly. It was really interesting, too. Like, we're talking about all of these moments where we're getting these hints that maybe what we're seeing is somehow not quite real. And this was another one of those moments, because the last thing that we see is the telescope, which is the last thing that's lit up before Sam turns off the last of the lights. And we now know that that telescope is associated with alternate dimensions.
Yeah.
And we know that there are alternate dimensions from his dreams that he had while he was connected with Chuck of the alternate endings that took place in this identical bunker with very similar, in many ways, Sam's and Dean's. So it's interesting to me that they're highlighting this telescope, which is an acknowledgement of alternate universes. I know that, you know, we're told that Chuck has destroyed all of them.
Well, Jack can restore them. He restored this one.
Yeah. Wherever Jack is now is one of the lines, so that's true. He could be in an alternate universe restoring things, which would make me actually feel better about him, because then maybe he comes back and, like, fixes everything with Earth once he's restored all the other galaxies and universes. I'm going to headcanon that.
Sure.
Just letting that settle.
I mean, I do think that visual of the telescope, knowing that it means alternate universes, I really wish that they would have told us for sure that the alternate universes were back, just because when that idea was introduced, in my mind, it canonized all of fan fiction.
Yes.
And I thought that that was really beautiful and really important. And I was really angry when that was something that they purposefully erased. I felt like that was pretty mean-spirited.
Yeah.
And so I really wish that that would have been purposefully stated, that the AUs were back. But, you know, I guess I'll go ahead and headcanon that perhaps this episode is an AU.
There are a lot of different ways that it could be read as being something that's not quite real. Something that's not quite right.
Or not right for the characters that we know and love.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I guess the last point that I wanted to make about the idea of Sam and Dean only having these relationships because they were something that Chuck wrote, and then when Chuck is gone, they don't care about them anymore. For me, one of the problems that I have about this is a point that we raised several times over the course of season 15, which is that Chuck fundamentally did not understand relationships.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't understand love. He didn't understand needing people for the sake of needing people.
Mm-hmm.
He always wanted something from people. He wanted to manipulate. He wanted to use. But he didn't understand the basic human need of being around other people for the sake of community.
Yeah.
And he certainly didn't understand love. And so to imply that because Chuck is gone, all of these genuine relationships of friendship and love and community that had been built up over the years are suddenly gone because Chuck isn't there just doesn't make sense to me mm-hmm. in terms of a plot point, because Chuck doesn't understand community. He doesn't understand the need for it. He never right. did. So to me, this would make more sense if Chuck was writing this ending.
Yeah.
Than it would if Chuck is gone from the narrative.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That was one of the things that I originally felt, and I still stand by, is that in this ending, as it stands, Chuck won.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck got what he wanted, which is why
mm-hmm.
it's so wrong. Our guys didn't win, in my mind. I don't know how to take this episode as a win. So,
I mean, Chuck outlived them. Like, outlived at least Dean.
Yeah.
Dean never got to live the life of, that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
It was cut short.
Right.
And the freedom that they fought so hard for was cut short for Dean. And then, as we're going to go on to talk about, Sam lived a hollow shell of a life that was no life. Neither of those things are things that make a win for right. our guys.
Yeah.
Unhappy Sam and Dean. Life cut short Sam and Dean does not count as a win. And you know what? We deserved an ending where the good guys won.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we got.
Yep.
So let's move on to Heaven. There's a lot that happens in the dialogue in Heaven that is interesting.
That is one word for it, yes.
We've been talking about the characterization of Dean and how, you know, I'm good with who I am. That's not who I am. He knows who he is now. He has this sense of self. And the first thing he says when he figures out that he's in heaven is, well, at least I made it to heaven.
Yeah.
And again, that is not within the scope of who Dean is now. I could see older Dean saying something like that, but not this Dean. Not the Dean who has accepted all of the things that Cass told him about himself, which we know that he did because he rejected Chuck's characterization of who he is, which is a killer, which is all of the dark and dirty parts of himself that he hated. And instead, he's reached a point by the middle of 19 where he accepts that he is better than that. He is better than who the villains think he is. And he is better than who he always thought he was. Because Cass sees him.
Yeah.
And he's accepted that. So for him to have the first thing that he says be like, well, at least I made it into heaven, was so jarring and such a jarring contrast from the narrative arc of his journey up until the very episode before.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it could be interpreted a couple of different ways. Well, at least I made it to heaven, you know, as in, at least I didn't go to hell, certainly, the first way. Well, at least I made it to heaven, as opposed to what I just went through, which sucked. So, like, I died, but at least I went to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, I feel like there's still a questioning, and his son is God. And so, like, mm-hmm. when your son is literal God and you die in a long, painful way And then you're like, oh, well, at least I'm in heaven, as if you weren't sure. It just made me so sad that he didn't have that confidence of feeling loved and protected by his kid. And I'm still frustrated by that.
Yeah.
So that line was hard.
Yep. That was one of those jarring moments for me.
Yeah. That did not feel good to hear.
No. No.
Especially with the understanding that the next line, what memory is this? It was like he resigned himself to dying, and now he's resigned himself to living in old memories. Which, the last time he was in heaven, his memories were happy, but Sam's weren't for him. And it's complicated.
Yeah, it was such a hollow heaven.
Right. It was hollow, and there was this underground network, which is great, but it's work. It's like, all right, well, now I'm in this new world that I have to deal with. So where am I? Mm. You know, what memory is this? Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on to the interactions with Bobby, because I thought this was really fascinating to me on a few levels. It was interesting to me that nobody saw what happened to Bobby at the end of the episode where he helps Sam and Dean while he's in heaven, except for Bobby and those angels who come at the very end of it to lock him up. So I always felt that Sam and Dean didn't do anything because they thought he was okay. And Cass didn't do anything because he thought he was okay.
Yeah.
But one of the first things that Dean says to Bobby is, the last thing that I heard was that you were in heaven's lockup.
Yeah.
And
what?
I went, pardon me?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, this makes no canonical sense. We've heard nothing about this on screen where they've been told any of this. And if they were told this, why the hell would they have left Bobby in heaven's lockup for all of these years?
Yeah.
And what does that say about who they are? That to me says again that they're sociopaths. Mm-hmm. Because they let their found father rot in heaven's jail for forever. Because, you know, just out of sight, out of mind, I guess. Even though I know that he's suffering in heaven's lockup. And even though Cass has visited heaven numerous times and could have gone to help him.
Well, there's no angels left. So, like, yeah, it wouldn't have been too hard, I don't think, to break Bobby out.
No. So there's this dissonance, right? And so I think on the surface, it reads as this moment of relief, because we've always known something happened to Bobby that wasn't good at the end of that episode. And we've always worried about what happened to our Bobby. And so I think on the surface, it's this cathartic moment of release. Bobby's okay. But the way that it's set up for us is this very problematic and troubling set of information that Dean suddenly has that A, he shouldn't have, and B, if he did have, why didn't he do something about it over the course of all of these years?
Yeah.
And what does that say about who he is as a person and who Sam is as a person? It says some pretty awful things that run counter to everything that we know Sam and Dean to be. So there's this dissonance that's just under the surface of this cathartic release where we should be going, oh my God, Bobby's okay. Thank God. Oh, there's this, wait a minute. There's something deeply wrong with the way that this information is being presented to us. Mm-hmm. This is a problem. This does not fit with the Sam and Dean that we know. Again, calling into question, is this the Sam and Dean that we know? I don't know. What's real here?
Yeah.
What's real? And that then gets underscored with what's been a big point in the fandom. And again, is Mitten's Morgul point, which is the El Sol beer that they drink, which has kind of gone around a lot of different places in a lot of different ways. But maybe you can break that down for us about what El Sol beer is and what its significance has been in the series.
Well, yeah, according to Mittens, it seems like El Sol is super duper common. I mean, it's the sign and the beer itself is all over the show. But it seems to be associated strongly with fantasy or dream elements. So like the djinn in, what is that, season 2?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's Dean's life if his mom had never died. Mm-hmm. The girlfriend that he has, we eventually come to realize, came from an Ill-Soul ad.
Yeah.
So it's also what served him in the beautiful room in heaven. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's just associated with a lot of those dream or alternate reality, not full on earth in real life stuff.
Yeah, and I think also associated with lying, with things not quite being truthful. Reality is being manipulated, or someone is lying or being lied to.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's an interesting choice. And I think it's an interesting choice as well because, you know, Bobby gets the beer out of the green cooler and Dean says, oh, wow, this tastes like the first drink I ever had with my dad. And Bobby says, quality stuff. And Dean says, no, it's crap, but it was fantastic. But the thing is, there are Ill-Soul signs at so many bars in Supernatural over the years. It's just a super common beer. And we've seen Dean drinking it in several situations. So this would not be a novel experience for him to be reliving. I mean, it's basically like the Supernatural version of Budweiser, I think. You know, it's just kind of everywhere. So I don't know why he's like, oh my gosh, when it's something that he's had multiple times, other than having it indicate that something's not quite right.
Right. So both the history of the beer use within the show and sort of the fact that it's familiar and calls upon things from the past, but it tastes awful.
Well, it calls on John specifically. And I think it's also interesting that Dean takes one sip and then puts it down and doesn't drink anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. And that sort of leads to some of the bigger exposition that we learn from Bobby is, I'll just read it. Bobby says, that kid of yours, before he went wherever, made some changes here, busted my ass out, and then he set some things right, tore down all the walls up here. Heaven ain't just reliving your golden oldies anymore. It's what it always should have been. Everyone happy, everyone together. Rufus lives about 5 miles that way with Aretha. Thought she'd have better taste. And your mom and dad, they got a place over yonder. It ain't just heaven, Dean. It's the heaven you deserve. And we've been waiting for you.
The things that are invoked in this.
Boy, there's a lot of questions that come from that. So I think the first thing that it really brought up for me is all of this, right? So he gets to heaven and Bobby's there and he's having a drink. That's the drink that he had with his dad. And, you know, Bobby's telling him about his mom and dad being across the way. This is after an episode that has been all about Sam and Dean being completely isolated from everyone else. Found family erased. And so it just, everything is about the past.
Yeah.
Like the ancient past for them.
Yeah.
This idea that childhood, even an abusive childhood, just colors everything. You know, old loves, old memories, old insecurities. There was no space here for what Dean grew into, what he grew to love. Heaven for him equaled these rare positive moments with his abusive dad.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and hey, by the way, your abusive dad is just over the hill.
Yeah.
Because you have the heaven that you deserve.
Yep. Yep. I mean, like, the idea of Dean going to heaven where, like, John was securely contained within his own separate sort of cell was actually quite comforting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would never have to deal with him again. But this breaks down that barrier. And again, it, on the surface, it's this happy lovey-dovey yay thing. Ah, everybody gets to be together and everybody gets to be happy. But then we look just below the surface and we learn that the man that Sam linked with the devil 3 episodes before, in saying that Dean had to protect him from both of them.
Yeah.
Is sharing heaven with Dean. I don't care what kind of a John apologist you are. Like, that ain't right.
Yeah.
And that makes no narrative sense.
Right. Like, why? Why would you link him with the devil just now?
Yep.
We're not talking about 3 years ago. We're talking about 3 episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
Well, and it's, and again, it's signaling to me that there's something deeply wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
There's something deeply, deeply wrong with this episode. There's something deeply, deeply wrong with the direction that this story has taken, because it's so vehemently disagreeing with the rest of what that season was saying. It's like this episode is at war with the rest of the season. And again, it just doesn't narratively fit.
Yeah.
It stands by itself. It's in isolation, just like we were talking about, you know, what was going on with how they started the very beginning of the episode.
Right.
By separating it from the narrative tradition of Carry On, Wayward Son,
mm-hmm.
they were isolating this episode from the rest of the series. This is, again, saying, like, this makes no sense. This does not work hand in hand with the story that they were just telling us.
Yeah.
And so there's a problem here. And here's where I find it really interesting. This is all, it's the heaven you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Deserve is a very weighty word in Supernatural.
It is.
And for me, you know, we've had all of these Caspicos with the burn, with the pizza, with just so many elements kind of going through the whole story. The introduction to Cass goes as follows. "And why would an angel rescue me from hell?" says Dean. Cass says, "Good things do happen, Dean." And Dean says, "Not in my experience." And then Cass says, "What's the matter? You don't think you deserve to be saved?" And so what are we looking at in this final scene in heaven? Well, at least I made it to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't think he deserves to be saved still.
Well, he thought he deserved to die, I guess. It was always mm-hmm. supposed to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just...
And it's the heaven you deserve.
Yeah.
But it's basically a hell for him, because he's in heaven with the man who abused him so badly that his brother groups him with the devil.
Yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, I would challenge that a little bit, because I'm sure Dean would be thrilled to see him, because that's part of the complicated relationship that people have with abusers, especially abusive parents. And so he wouldn't see it, I don't think, in that way that, like, oh my God, I'm in hell, the same way he would if, you know, Lucifer walked by.
Mm.
But, you know, one of the things that Bobby said that I've struggled with is, it's what it's always should have been, everyone happy, everyone together. Well, how can everyone be together and be happy if they still have their autonomy? I don't understand how those things work together. So again, it sounds great on the surface, but I don't understand how that really works in practice.
Good point.
So I do think it's significant that Dean doesn't run over to his parents.
Mm.
He takes one sip of his dad's beer and then goes in the opposite direction, basically. But we've talked about these themes of silencing, and Dean's pretty quiet through this. I mean, it's exposition, so of course he kind of has to be. But Dean says, "So Jack did all that." And Bobby said, "Well, Cass helped." And he raises his eyebrows. "It's a big new world out here, you'll see." So first of all, Dean doesn't respond to "Cass helped." You know, he doesn't mm-hmm. ask about Cass or where he is. He doesn't look surprised or, I would say, even relieved. He just kind of smiles, like, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't the reaction I would expect at this juncture.
This is the same man who took the stairs two at a time when he thought that Cass had returned to the bunker.
Yeah. He seems awfully chill. And I get he just got to heaven and he's taken it all in. But again, I mean, Dean's an intense guy when it comes to people that he loves. So,
yeah.
But the phrase that Bobby used, "It's a big new world out there." Are we supposed to see heaven as the new Earth, like the new world, the paradise on Earth that Jack promised? I don't see it that way, though. I don't know.
No. Well, it's not, because paradise, it was paradise on Earth. It wasn't a new Earth in paradise. It was paradise on Earth. And that's the revelation version of things, is that the old heaven and the old earth pass away and everything is made new. So again, this doesn't fit either with the biblical stuff that was being pulled from very heavily by Cass in his conversation with Kelly, nor does it fit with what he told Dean paradise was supposed to be, according to his understanding of what Jack told him and showed him while he was still in utero.
And if it's the garden, because we sort of wondered about that too, if the crossroads of
divinity and humanity.
Yeah.
But I feel like that got completely dropped too.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I thought maybe then heaven was going to be, oh, all the humans and the celestial beings all go to the same place, you know, because of its crossroads. But yeah, that fell off too. So yeah, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny, I don't think, the way that this heaven works. We weren't given enough information to make it make sense, which is disappointing when we're trying so desperately to find a way to make peace with what we were shown with Dean.
Yeah.
So the conversation continues and Dean says that heaven is almost perfect. And so he says that, and my initial reaction was, oh, it's almost perfect because there's all of these people that he hasn't seen yet. You know, he hasn't seen Cass and Charlie and I don't know, so many people that he's lost along the way. Mm. And Bobby said, he'll be along. And it like jarred me. Like, God, he really is only talking about Sam? Is that still?
Yep.
And so
And at that point, he's like actively wishing that Sam is dead. Like, just like, dude.
Yeah. Or, because it was like, okay, so is he waiting for the people that he loves that he was missing, like Cass and Charlie, who he knows are in heaven? Or is he missing the people that are still on Earth, Sam, Jody, Donna? And then it's just, he'll be along. And so, you know, and so my question there is, truly, are they trying to tell us that Dean genuinely and truly, after all of this, only cares about getting Sam? Or is Bobby making an assumption? And again, Dean is being silent and just going along with what is expected of him, what he is supposed to want. Dean is silent. We don't know.
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
I don't know. It's a bummer either way, basically.
It is. And then we get the wonderful sequence of Dean driving in the dirty Impala past things like... I was watching and I was like, he literally drives past survey tape. You know how they put out the orange tape on sticks when they're surveying land? He literally drives by a bunch of those. You see that, these bright orange. And I'm like, heaven? Why did they include that in the shot of heaven? Like, this just feels sloppy at this point.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah. I think the fact that Bobby says you got everything you could ever want or need or dream, which I thought was interesting phrasing, given the circumstances. Phrasing. So I guess the question is, what are you going to do now, Dean? And Dean says, I think I'll go for a drive. Which again, surface level. Yeah. Dean loves to drive. He loves his car. It's just that he literally drove up to that barn in his car. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like that's something that he's been missing.
Right.
He's had access to his car. He takes drives all the time. Mm-hmm. What he hasn't had is access to Cass, is access to Charlie, is access to his mom, though I get that that's complicated.
Ellen.
Yeah, Ellen, Joe, Pastor Jim, so many of them. The friends that they've lost, just so many. I can't even begin to name all of the people that he has lost in horrific and tragic ways. You know, when we are told so eloquently and beautifully that everything Dean has ever done, he has done for love. And then he is given the possibility of everything. And we're shown that he literally has no identity. He has just nothing unless he has Sam, was so reducing of his character and who he is. Mm-hmm. I get that he is sad that Sam's not there, but what is the point of telling Sam to keep living and keep fighting if Dean's just gonna twiddle his thumbs until Sam gets there? Why can't Dean finally have it? This was like another example of a way they could have at least tried to have Dean self-actualize.
Yeah.
In going to find a life and some happiness outside of Sam, to be his own person, to stand on his own two feet, to have other experiences and relationships, to relax.
Yeah, go fishing.
And it was just like, no. And they did show him driving past driveways. And was that purposeful? I don't know.
But it makes you imagine, oh, who's at that driveway that right. he just drove by?
Well, I guess he's making the choice that he cannot engage with or visit with or contact anyone other than Bobby, who he didn't get to control, until he gets to Sam. And I think there's a lot of ways that could have been different. We didn't need to see Cass for Cass to have been referenced there. We didn't need Misha physically present in a pandemic for them to have incorporated him into this picture in a meaningful way, as opposed to Cass helped.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like Dean was reduced to pie, cars, beer, and Sam, which is...
Yeah. It's a caricature.
Yeah. It's really, really enraging, because why do 15 years of work to give us one of the most complicated, nuanced, flawed, perfect, beautiful characters to then reduce them to a caricature of themselves in the finale?
Yep.
Yeah. I'll stop ranting now.
No.
I have strong feelings about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. It's a caricature of who Dean is, and the way that you just articulated it is beautiful and perfect. I mean, why create such a rich character only to reduce him to these essentialist elements of who he is? It's a disservice to everything and everyone who built that character over 15 years.
Yeah. Your identity is not formed around your favorite dessert.
Right. Nor is it formed around one person, no matter how isolated you may be.
Yeah.
I'm an introvert. And there are so many people in my life who were formative and important in my identity and in my current life. You know, like, I'm an only child. I love my parents. But, like, there's more in my life than just my parents. Mm-hmm. And so it's just not realistic.
Yeah.
So that is all kind of interwoven with this really tragic montage of Sam's life, that again, we have these things that make me kind of go, how accurate are we here?
Yeah.
How real is this reality?
Yeah.
We've talked all about the blurry wife and the baby Dean and so on and so forth. But there are a few things that I noticed this time around that I think are speaking to some interesting stuff. And one of those things was that, remember how I talked early on about how there was this evoking of a feeling of earlier episodes in mm-hmm. terms of place, and how the pie scene reminded me of peace of mind?
Mm-hmm.
I found that the house that we see the inside of Sam's house really evoked for me the house from Nightmare Logic in season 14, mm-hmm. which is the episode with the djinn mm-hmm. that Michael has put to lay in wait for them. And it's interesting because it's slightly different. It's not quite the same, but there are these elements that are very similar. So there's a lot of paintings on the wall in both. There's this really strong floral print wallpaper in both. There's wood paneling everywhere in both, and really dark colored furniture in both. So to me, it brought up that atmosphere of this house that is literally inhabited by nightmares. Because in this episode with the djinn, what happens is this djinn can, because of the powers that Michael has given him, he can evoke your worst fear and manifest it in the real world. So he's able to manipulate reality in a way that it can injure people,
yeah,
and kill people. And so I was trying to pin that down for a little while, and I finally realized it started with the wallpaper.
Yeah.
And
that wallpaper makes a statement.
It really does. In both episodes, they're very bright floral wallpaper. In this one, it's a lot gaudier, mm-hmm. but it's that sort of feel. And then it was the paintings, and then it was the so on and so on and so on. But it went further than that. So, okay. I got really excited about this part. So in the story of Nightmare Logic, there's the resident of the house who's a senior citizen who's been entrapped by this djinn who is feeding off of him and taking his blood. And they have a setup in sort of like almost a living room type setting where there's the bed up against some windows and there's a heart monitor. If you're facing the bed, it's to the right. And behind it are windows and there's all of this dark wood and everything around it. And the layout is so similar to the way that we see old Sam.
Yeah.
When he's dying, he's set in a room that doesn't look like a bedroom. It looks like some sort of a living space kind of room. There are windows in the background. The monitor is set up on the right with the heart monitor as you're facing the bed. And so visually, it was really evoking this stuff. And again, what's going on here just doesn't feel quite right all the way through. So I thought it was really interesting that they seem to be evoking visually this different story where reality is being interfered with by a malevolent force.
Mm-hmm.
And what absolutely killed me, and we'll go into some more of the details of the room in a second because I think they're important, but what absolutely killed me about all of this is that one of the moments that happens is that AU Bobby gets confronted by a vision from his past. His dead son comes back and literally lifts him up and spikes him to a tree. He drives a spike through him, and in this case, it's an angel blade. But it was really weird to me that in these two different stories, you have somebody being impaled up against wood in this really painful way. And in Nightmare Logic, it's all happening because something is messing with reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just kind of made me go, huh. But then we go into the pictures that are in the background of two different parts of this montage with Sam.
Yeah, so there's the picture of Sam, Dean, John, and Mary that's hugeantic. It's this giant picture in the living mm-hmm. room there as like a centerpiece. But that picture can't exist in their world. It's a promo shot for Lebanon.
Yep. And so it's not a picture of Mary and John and Sam and Dean. It's a picture of Samantha, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Jared and Jensen.
Yeah. I mean, they're in character. But the Pearl scene, or the Pearl episode, first of all, I don't know who could have taken a picture like that, even if they had thought to do such a thing. But it doesn't matter because everything was erased from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything was undone because they smashed the pearl. So even if there had been a picture, it would have been erased as everything reverted back to the appropriate timeline. So the fact that that picture is there and huge and literally cannot exist in our canon world is another thing to add to the list of possible reasons why this isn't reality.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go back just a quick minute just to sort of briefly go through what we see of Sam's life. We see him with toddler young Dean, and Sam is wearing a wedding ring very visibly. Mm-hmm. Sam is happy and smiling and looks genuinely joyful when he is with young Dean, but he is not shown happy or at all with literally anyone else. Like, he doesn't share the screen with anyone else other than young Dean.
Mm-hmm.
So he plays catch with young Dean. The blurry wife is in the background I don't know how to, like, I know that Jared has raised the possibility that it's not a wife, that it's open to interpretation, but we immediately see him with a wedding ring and a kid and then a woman. I feel like...
Yeah, it's not a male partner. Krisha, it's a woman who looks like she has blondish hair, wearing a dress that's kind of like a pinky, purpley, lavendery color. I mean, it doesn't get any more stereotypical,
right?
White.
Yeah, heteronormative. So she doesn't have a face. She doesn't have an identity, but there's two bikes that are leaned up against the wall there. One of them is an adult-sized turquoise bike with a pink helmet. The other is sort of like a kid's bike that's blue. So again, those very gender norms.
Yeah.
And when I think of, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but when I think of Sam and blurry women, because that's a thing that I can say apparently. But we think about old episodes being invoked. And so for me, so much of Amelia involved blurriness, right? Because everything was sort of hazy and blurred.
Yes! Like
she wasn't, but everything else was.
Yes!
And so it was like the inverse of that. I can't believe this is a conversation we're actually having. So then we get to the pictures on the mantle. And so this is Sam doing homework with young Dean, who looks like he's a teenager. And the pictures on the mantle are Sam and Dean, Mary, Dean, Mary, and Sam, Sam and Dean, Sam and Dean, Sam and Dean. So this is a house that presumably he's been in for a while. He is married because he's wearing a ring. He has a child, and his living room is all Winchester.
Mm-hmm.
There's no found family. There's no friends. There's no recent pictures. So again, it's this idea that there's only space for old things.
There's only room for the past.
Yeah. And so it's very much the Winchester legacy.
Yeah.
And so then it pans over to Sam doing homework with young Dean at the table. And with this idea of family legacy in mind now, because we've just looked at all these Winchesters, I look at that scene, and on the surface, this very wholesome, you know, Sam is happy and smiling and doing homework with his kid, and that's lovely. But there's one piece of furniture in the background, and it is a bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a mini bar. And mm-hmm. I find that really disturbing and problematic, because again, when there's so much problematic mental health messaging in this episode,
yeah,
we're talking about family legacy. Dean struggled with alcoholism, and he drank when he was depressed. This is a child named Dean after his uncle.
Well, and John was an alcoholic.
Absolutely.
Too. I mean, that's how we're introduced to him. Mm-hmm. He's working overtime on a Miller time shift.
Absolutely.
It's the very first thing that we hear about John is that he's an alcoholic.
Yeah, and alcoholism is genetic. It is passed down in families.
Mm-hmm.
Sam wasn't portrayed to be an alcoholic, but so many of his major storylines had to do with addiction. It was demon blood instead of booze. But again, I just didn't understand the choice to put alcohol in this supposedly wholesome scene with Sam and young Dean as a teenager, when that's the life phase in which kids really start to experiment with things like that.
Yeah.
So I really found that to be unsettling and disappointing, honestly.
And it was interesting, you know, I paused for a second there, meaning to look at the wallpaper, and this whole Winchester's only theme is literally picked up by the art. There's this picture that is on the wall to the right of the shot looking into this room with the dining room table where they're working on the homework. And it's literally two houses side by side in isolation, surrounded by nothingness, just green, empty space. And if that isn't a metaphor for what they were trying to do with the brothers in this episode, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know what is. So it was really interesting that even the art decor, the photos, everything was screaming just isolation. It's just the two of us. It's only the two of us. and how unhealthy that is and how isolating that is and how it perpetuates trauma. Because the next scene that we have is Sam as an old man sitting inside of Baby and just crying.
Yeah.
And looking broken and sad and alone and frail.
Looking to the past.
Yeah.
Everything is about the past.
Yeah.
Nothing is about the present and what he has grown into, the life that he went on to live.
Yeah.
It's all about the past.
And even though you could argue that young Dean is a way of him looking into the future, I think the fact that he names him Dean tells us that all he's doing is looking into the past. And again, it's just, it's really problematic. Like, the only thing that matters is blood. So he's perpetuating that sad and lonely space for himself and for his son. Or, you know, like on his deathbed, just him and his son. Where's the blurry wife? We don't know.
Yeah.
And again, they go back to that scene with the pictures. We get that a second time to underscore that's all that matters. And it's so isolating and so sad and so lonely. It just hurt me for Sam because Sam was so much bigger than that. Sam was a leader. Sam was a burgeoning witch or warlock or whatever you want to call him. But he was the inheritor of Rowena's power and magic. He knew what I think was real love and had something beautiful with a real well-rounded, interesting, challenging, exciting, fun, determined, self-actualized woman in Eileen. He had the AU Hunters. He had Bobby. He had all of these people in his life that then are just gone. But even if they were all just gone, the Sam that we know would have rebuilt.
He would have honored them.
Yeah, he would have continued to build community. He would have continued to help people. He would have continued to be a person that was social and liked being around people. And so this all points to a very broken Sam to me. And not the Sam that we know.
Yeah. And as we're wrestling with that, there were also things that just didn't necessarily make sense to me, which is that where did he get the money for that kind of house? You know, it seemed like a pretty nice house, nice garage. You know, he seemed to stay in that house for so many years. How were the monsters not after him? Like, how was it safe to do that if they still exist and he's still well known? Jack was clearly not interested in saving Dean. Can't imagine he would be trying to protect Sam. So how does that work? You know, I don't know. And then we get to the end of Sam's life where he's in the hospital bed in that same living room with pictures from the distant past still dominating that room and, you know, dominating him. He's literally underneath them all. You know, the only thing that has changed in those pictures is that two pictures of young Dean were added.
Oh, wow.
And everything else stayed the same. We could see a little bit more of them. So there was a picture of Bobby with Sam and Dean on the mantle, the only example of found family up there. But, you know, the other thing is that at this point, young Dean is an adult. So there's, you know, part of me that wonders, did young Dean just finally get fed up of not being on the mantle and just put his damn self up there? I don't know. But yeah, at that point we see young Dean sit on the bed with Sam, and we see now that he has an anti-possession tattoo. And on the surface, that's like, aw, that's their thing. Look.
That's the family crest.
Right. But does that mean that Sam got his kid into hunting just like John did? Does that mean that demons are still
a problem
here too? Because again, what was the point of any of it then?
Well, I mean, like, what's going on with Rowena then? Because demons are not supposed to be around inhabiting people's bodies the way that they used to.
Like, it just, it was like something that should have been lovely, but it doesn't stand up to scrutiny, or it causes a lot of concerning questions to be raised. And then again, because everything is so wrapped up in the past, young Dean says, just like in the scene in the barn with Dean's death. Young Dean says, it's okay, you can go now. And Sam dies exactly like Dean did. So he's wearing Dean's watch, and then he exhales and has the tear. And the only difference in this scene is that young Dean doesn't cry when Sam dies.
Oh, God.
It's the only difference that I could discern.
I mean, he's also not impaled on a spike, but...
Well, I mean, Sam cried because he was losing Dean. Mm. Young Dean is not crying, even though he's losing Sam. I mean, yeah, I'm sure that young Dean was mentally preparing for it and everything. I think that everybody grieves differently. And so, I'm not judging young Dean here for not crying. It's just that in a show that's thematically been about these men finding a way to be vulnerable and to express emotion, to then have it be the family legacy is young Dean saying, it's okay, you can go now, and then like just stone-faced as his dad dies.
Ugh. Sorry.
I just thought it was not the message I would have hoped for. Mm. You know, having another Winchester guy not really outwardly expressing emotion. I just thought was disheartening.
Well, especially Sam's kid. Mm-hmm. Sam was always the one who could let his emotions out, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, we don't know young Dean enough to know what that's about. So it's not about him. We don't know who he is as a character, so we can't judge him. We can only look at thematic elements of the entire show. You know, the things that are weaved through. And that's not the note that I preferred to be left with. Mm-hmm. So then we go back up to heaven. Dean has been driving around. He stops on the bridge and gets out. He waits at the rail until he realizes that Sam is there, and he turns around. And Dean says, hey, Sammy. Sam says, Dean. They hug. They walk over to the bridge.
Deeply emotive.
And Dean, who had just left Sam, right? He just died, and he's been driving around for a little bit, looks at Sam with this just joyful expression, you know, which is just so lovely. Jensen has such a way of invoking emotion, even when I'm feeling other things. He can still just wring it out of me, whether I want it or not. Sam, who hasn't seen Dean in literal decades, just looks out at the water.
Yep.
So no questions, no glancing at Dean to ground himself in the fact that Dean is there.
No checking in. Yeah.
If Sam was married, which he wore a ring, why was his wife not at his deathbed? If it's because she was already dead, why isn't she there when he got to heaven? We don't even know who she is, and she's devalued and erased more than once in this episode. Mm-hmm. Again, there's no Cass, there's no reference to Cass or Jack or...
Yep.
I don't know what to do with that ending scene. I want it to be beautiful. It should be beautiful. It looks beautiful, and it just makes me sad.
Except for the fact that, you know, the drone camera kicked up dust when it was flying away from them. Like, you literally see a cloud of dust be like, boom, as it's taking off and like hits their lip. Anyway, okay. What's interesting here again is you've got this surface narrative, right? Which is Dean is happy. He's in heaven. He's driving around. Everything is great. And you've got Sam, who's living the apple pie life, you know, having a kid, having a wife, being a dad, all of those things. On the surface, they're really happy. They're really good. They should be fulfilling. But in both instances, both of these men are so visually isolated from everyone and everything except for each other, that it's sad. A life should be about more than one person, no matter how much you love that person.
Yes.
The messaging that this is sending is so toxic
and so sad and so lonely. We, as human beings, need community. That is a fundamental part of who we are. That is the fundamental way in which humans have been wired evolutionarily. We need community. We need people. People need people. As difficult as it can be, we need each other. And so to send the message that one person can be your everything, can fulfill every need, can be everything that you need that person to be, is just so out of touch with reality. But it's also out of touch with healthy growth, healthy being, healthy existence.
Yeah.
And so it's just a very problematic message to send, just as a general message. Mm-hmm. And but you know, the irony here is that as Dean is pulling up to the bridge, and he's been alone for all of these decades, and this is while, you know, Sam's still alive, the lyrics are saying, now your life's no longer empty. But their lives have been empty.
Yeah.
His afterlife has been empty. So the lyrics are underscoring the fact that Dean's life has been empty. Sam's life has been empty. There has been no purpose. There has been no meaning. Nothing has been changed. Nothing has been altered from the beginning. And bad things are still happening, even though there's supposed to be a good God now. People are still suffering. It's just, it's really interesting. And the irony of all of this is, it's showing this on Dean. Like, all of this, as the lines are saying, now your life's no longer empty. Surely heaven waits for you. They're not focusing on Sam in that moment, who's on his deathbed. They're focusing on Dean in that moment, when his entire existence in heaven has been empty. Mm-hmm. And he's already in heaven. Heaven should be waiting for Dean. He should still be alive.
Yeah.
And the lyrics are underscoring, again, there's that surface level, and then there's this dissonance, this thread that just is scratchy and doesn't fit. And this is that sort of second layer again, I think, where the surface narrative is being disrupted by lyrics that are telling us what we've just been shown visually. We weren't told it, we were shown it.
Yeah.
And so no matter what people tell us, this is the perfect heaven, this is the perfect apple pie life, what we are shown is loneliness and isolation and sadness. Mm-hmm. And so again, there's that dissonance there. So again, I hesitate to ascribe intention here, but it's a running theme throughout the entire episode that there is a tension between the surface narrative and what the visual cues are telling us.
Yeah.
And what the sometimes musical cues are telling us. So it's really interesting that there is this constant tension and this constant undermining of what we're being told on the surface, and then woven throughout with the pizza, with the El Sol, with baby being dirty, with mm-hmm. just all of these different elements that have been woven in, the feel of peace of mind, the feel of nightmare logic kind of woven in. I feel like there's enough going on here to kind of go, huh, there's kind of something happening that is making me question how much I'm supposed to take this on board.
Yeah, I agree.
And so maybe we can transition at this point to what we think now that we've done all of this analysis.
You and I did a pretty thorough breakdown of the montage at the end of 19. And
yes,
there were a lot of things in that montage that were alternate reality or dream sequences or djinn worlds or things like that.
Yes. Can I just go through them really quickly? Because it's crazy how many there are. Okay. Alternate reality. Lawn mowing with the djinn. Sam and Jess kiss with the djinn. Changing channels. Like three different references. The pearl scene. The charming acres from Peace of Mind
references. There's a reference to when Dean forgets who he is and he's riding the bull. Again, that's an altered state of mind. So there are all of these references to that. And then there are alternate dimensions. They reference the French mistake. They reference being sucked into the television, into Scooby Natural World. They reference Oz. They reference the fairy, and they live in an alternate dimension. And they reference Kaya, who opens a portal to a different dimension. So it's really interesting that in this really brief montage, where it's supposed to just be about, oh, look at all these characters, they're making all of these references to alternate dimensions and to altered states of mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on top of that, one of the things that we talked about the most is that there was the Supernatural musical in there. So...
yes.
Fan-based Sam and Dean. And one of the things that they showed was the musical Sam and Dean with the intermission curtain going across. And that really, for you and I, we found that to be very significant because we thought that, you know, in the Supernatural musical fan fiction episode, they have canon as act one and then fan fiction as act two. The robots and spaceships ninjas. And ninjas. And we explore the exact nature of Destiel in act two. Like all of it is act two. So we kind of thought that that was passing the keys to the kingdom perhaps. And that 20 was going to be, you know, fan fiction based. The kind of things that, that you see on AO3. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that. But another way to look at that is still that the curtain was closing on canon.
Yes.
So yes. Regardless of what 20 is, if it's the kind of ending that you would want to see, or if it's something that you wrestle with and have a hard time making sense of, I think that the option is embedded in the montage of a very purposeful choice. If they wanted to invoke that episode, there could have been much cleaner ways to do it. Than that particular bit which has the curtain saying intermission. So I feel like for me, I can take that as permission to not recognize 20 as canon.
Yep. Well, and I think that kind of what we've done as we've gone through this is we've dismantled all of the bits and pieces and kind of examined them and said, okay, does this fit? Does this not fit? Why does this not fit? If it does not fit. Mm-hmm. And is this a divergence or is this straight up, it's not canon compliant. It doesn't make sense within the rules of this world. Or is it saying something else? Is it saying, maybe this isn't real. Maybe this isn't something that takes place within our canon universe. Mm-hmm. So I think either way, looking at the different elements and bringing them into question and comparing them to the trajectory that we were on versus what we got at the end, I think it really breaks it down in a way that for me is really helpful. Like now that we've done this, I'm like, heck yeah, that made no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
None of it made sense. There's a lack of logic on so many different levels, from issues of canon compliance, like killing a man as vampires and then feeding on him after he's dead when dead man's blood, like that just blew my mind, Krisha. Mm-hmm. To things like the erasure of found family and the toxicity of that messaging, just in terms of like normal, healthy storytelling. Like we exist in community. We don't exist just for one person. So I think all of the work that we've done here is helping me personally to be like, yeah, no, this was, no, I can reject this thoroughly, completely, and without any kind of reservations. And I think I'd had reservations before now. I think I was kind of like, is this all just bias? But so much of it just does not make sense within the canon of how the universe should work, nor within the story trajectory of this season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think once we really started breaking it down, we had been talking kind of existentially or abstractly about a lot of things, but there truly are themes of things being fake, things not being real. There are themes of silencing. Mm-hmm. There are themes of betrayal. Mm-hmm. There are themes of pointlessness. You know, one of the things I forgot to mention is the Brothers in Arms song that was playing while Sam was walking around the bunker and grieving is a song, so far as I can tell, about the pointlessness of war on both sides. that it's just pointless for everyone. And so, again, so many themes of pointlessness. And so when you add all of that together and you add in the lack of logic and you add in problematic messaging, for me, it explains the emotional response that I had, because I get very anxious when I don't understand what's going on. And, yes. You know, this really helps me understand what was going on, and that it's not a me issue. It's a show issue. I feel much more grounded in that, much steadier with that. And so I guess it for me gives some freedom to sort of pick and choose, you know, like we were talking about Miracle and how she's adorable and we'll keep her.
Yep.
So that's cool. We'll keep her. You know, the idea of Dean being terrified to knock on Sam's door in the pilot. Yep, I'll keep that. That seems right. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, truly, truly, Dean is not dead. Like, it doesn't make sense that he would be. And the way that we were shown that happening just doesn't. I mean, how many episodes of Supernatural have we watched where something's going on and you get to a point and you're like, yeah, something's not right. And then it always ends up that, yeah, there's a djinn or there's like some. You know, I felt like I had that impression watching this episode, and we perhaps didn't get that resolution, but that doesn't stop that feeling from being any more real. That rejection of like, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to invest in this djinn world because something's up, you know?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I am.
All right. Well, let's wrap it there then.
I think at 4 a.m., for me, 5 a.m. for you. It's probably a solid plan.
I think so too. Thanks for hanging in there with us, everyone.
Seriously.
This was a lot to go through for us. I'm sure it was a lot for you to listen. We hope, again, that it was helpful for you. I think it was helpful for both of us, but we hope that this goes beyond us and other people find this emotionally helpful as they're going through a journey of healing and trying to come to terms with the finale. So thank you for being here with us, and you can message us and stay up to date with the latest on our Twitter and Instagram pages. That's at the Fangirl Biz, B-I-Z or B-I-Z. We will see you again next time, and until then, carry on, wayward friends. We love you. Bye, bye. To go ahead and take that away from my cat. He found yet another piece of stuff that I thought I had gotten rid of, but okay, just a second. I'm taking my earphones out. Hi, love. You make life interesting. I've not been paying attention to you for far too long.